Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
So we're back for another episode of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast. I'm here with Adam Harmitz, Group Program Manager on the SharePoint Engineering Team. We're out at SharePoint Conference 2018, and we're going to talk to Adam a little bit about some of the announcements that came out this week and some of the areas that he works on in SharePoint. So welcome, Adam. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's great. Great to be here.
Awesome. So why don't we go ahead and get right into it? One of the kind of tentpole announcements that came out this week was SharePoint Spaces and bringing some mixed reality and virtual reality experiences over to SharePoint. Can you describe those a little bit, help our audience understand what's coming up in that space and maybe some use cases around that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely early days for this, and we're still trying to see, you know, where it'll go. I think we're honestly interested in seeing everybody's reaction. You know, the announcement that we made is we have a new product part of SharePoint embedded as a fluid part of your internet called SharePoint Spaces. It allows you to create a mixed reality experience, sort of point and click. If you create a website, you can create a mixed reality experience. And we really are trying to mainstream mixed reality. So many people might just add it as a web part on an existing communication site, no headset required. And it's just a fluid way of, you know, interacting with a piece of content. And then, of course, for those who want a really interactive experience, probably a little more for a special moment, they'd create a full mixed reality experience. You put a headset on and experience that. It's web VR based, so it really is supposed to be available everywhere. That's how we are able to do not only web and headset, but across many types of different headsets. We actually use a technology on top of web VR called Babylon JS, so sort of almost like React for MR.
Okay.
And that has allowed us to rapidly iterate on it. So we're actually, it was a judgment call for us to go public with this sort of pretty early, but we have always relied on the community to give us great scenarios, and so there's an open form, aka.ms/SharePoint-spaces, where you can apply to be part of our private preview. We've talked to some customers about it so far, and clearly training pops as a thing where you would want a new employee orientation. You know, for those that more than you'd expect end up having some sort of MR prototype or 3D objects in their environment. Mm-hmm. Everybody uses AutoCAD really, you know, an awful lot. People design buildings. Many people still sell physical objects, I guess.
Turns out.
And so having a catalog of that, we certainly think would pop. Reading text in mixed reality is not the best experience. Someday it might be, and then I think even more scenarios open up. But right now it's sort of more explore a little bit in this, you know, take some real data offline to view later. So
very cool.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's something you guys have actually been working on for quite a while, and you guys have done a really good job at keeping this a secret, it sounds like, for as long as you guys have been working on it.
Yeah, it started about 18 months ago. Jeff wrote a white paper, I think over the holidays or something like that.
Okay.
It's what we all do on our holidays.
Exactly.
Yeah. Papers,
you know, break out, write some Unity code. Yeah. That's Jeff Deeper for you. And then, yeah, out of that started a small incubation team, and we had a stage gate about 6 months later when we did sort of talk about it with Satya and a couple other leaders, and it seemed to be going well enough that we thought there might be something there. And then we sort of expanded it out with going from prototype into something that was real live code that we wanted to get customers' feedback and reaction to.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it did leak the night before where somebody scraped our site, I think, and found the YouTube video about 6 hours ahead of time. But other than that, we had pretty good luck.
Yeah, you got that. The embargoes, you know, it's hard to schedule a time in a CMS when that's
exactly.
Releases,
yeah.
But it's super interesting. And I think one of the things that was lost on me in the keynote and kind of sitting there and watching things through and headsets going on was the lack of a requirement to need the headset and to carry all that through. So I think that's important to call out too, right?
Yeah.
It gives you that experience and you're in control kind of on the consumer side for what the level of immersion is and where that makes sense. I was trying to think about employee onboarding and saying, like, okay, you know, we're going to bring a group of 50 people in and sit them all down at the desk and say, here, we're going to do our HR paperwork in, you know, headsets. It's like, I don't know that's going to happen. Oculus will be really happy, right? Or HTC, we're buying a bunch of fives or something else. But yeah, the way it's described like that, where it is kind of build the experience and then choose the level of immersion and dive into it, makes it a lot more approachable.
Yeah, and you know, it's really early days. We will see where this develops and where this goes. You know, back in the day, people didn't think PowerPoint was going to replace foils like that.
Little did they know.
I mean, really, you know, right? And, you know, also websites at the time, replacing a corkboard in your intranet, like, oh, the cost to develop an intranet site was way too high, or, you know, that notion. And so I do think it's a matter of when, not if. And, you know, we'll see on the when. And I'm just super eager now that we can talk about it publicly, get feedback from customers, and see where it goes.
Yeah. So. My favorite part was when you guys mentioned 3D web parts. I'm like, oh, sweet, now we have web parts, and we have 3D web parts.
Yeah, no, I mean... Yeah, and, you know, Twitter was certainly, I think, responded very well to it, but many people were commenting how the thing they were excited about was lists or something else that was a little less futuristic. And that's totally great, right? Yep. Like, there was supposed to be a little bit of something for everyone. We're not putting 100% of the dev team on mixed reality. We're putting an appropriate amount so we can learn together. And I do think people are looking to Microsoft. People are betting their careers on SharePoint, and they want to know that it has a future and that we are spending a responsible portion of our engineering resources thinking about what might be next, such that we can go on it together. And that's one of the reasons we were super early about this, even before we had sort of real case studies, because we wanted to bring the community along and make them part of this process. And I think that's the best way we can do it, and that's the best way we can provide, frankly, a service to the entire community. Come with us, we'll explore this together. I believe SharePoint Spaces will look different in a year than it does today, and we don't totally know where it'll go and how it'll pivot, but we're eager to start learning.
That's always the other important thing for customers to recognize too, is they're going to help drive that experience and what it turns into, and their feedback or their potential use cases coming in that drives directly into engineering. And it is a customer-driven development cycle to a certain degree to help make sure that all that stuff comes out and comes to fruition.
We thought about it a while. We think the inform and engage, the sort of few-to-many information dissemination, is the area that's likely to resonate best in this compared to the other parts of SharePoint. But, you know, we're open to learning from that as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned the SharePoint list. And that was one thing I came out of it was, like two different areas. The SharePoint Spaces was the new tech that it's like, this is coming. It's very much the early stage. We got to see where it's going. It's very cool. And then the SharePoint list was the side of it where it's like, I can actually go to a customer right now today with some of those announcements and say, this is why you need to get on the modern UI, use that. So it was nice to see two different, I would say it's like two different aspects to the keynote. The this is what's coming, and the this is some practical stuff you can use today or as soon as it's released in the next month or two.
Yeah, that was definitely intentional. You know, I think a couple years ago when we were rebooting SharePoint, we were very heavily based towards here's the meat and potatoes. Like, here, let's modernize the core, right? And we're by no means done with that. But I do feel like the customer and community responded well enough to that. You can start talking about the portfolio, taking some more speculative bets because you're starting to have coverage and people have a sense of the durable strategy across many of the parts of SharePoint. So it was, you know, that good. Hopefully it resonates well. Yeah, it's supposed to be a little bit of something for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about lists a little bit more. I know we've got the big transition from classic to modern, which is still ongoing and still encouraging organizations and consumers of the platform to come over to all the benefits that modern gives us and responsive UIs and really more modern interfaces and hopefully better UX and better interactions for users. So there were a bunch of improvements there in kind of that art of the real or art of the tangible scenario for lists. Everything from formatters and audience targeting and a bunch of other, I'll call them maybe feature parity with classic that's come over from that side. You want to walk us through some of the improvements there?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, around the office, we sort of call 2018 the year of the list, just because we really wanted to have something that articulated our ambition level. We've improved pages very dramatically over the past couple years, and files, and therefore document libraries, too. And lists got a lot of improvements because they were made modern as well. They drafted behind doclibs a little bit, and we wanted to make sure that people understood that we know that, I mean, lists are incredibly popular when you look at our usage in the service, incredibly important scenarios. And frivolous scenarios like tracking t-shirt sizes, a little bit of everything, right? And so we just wanted to sort of say, hey, we're going to put a focus on lists as it's almost like it's its own product. Like if you look at a point solution for lists, it'll be on par. It's not just something that drafts behind everything else. We know that there's so many scenarios that people bet on for. And so that is what we're trying to do. You know, and the vision in the keynote showed a whole bunch of features that will help with that. More so than any individual feature, it was more like, hey, this ambition level of lists is something that we will improve and bet on is important. We did talk about the creation experience. We talked about and really simplifying that, being able to basically start from an existing list to really help simplify that.
Which is great. That UI is way collapsed down.
Yeah, no.
A lot more discoverable.
Less clicks to get going for sure. And yeah, that approachability of lists. Like, I mean, we all know if you know what a list is, you know how powerful it is. But sometimes if you've never used one, how do you get started? Because they're not the most approachable thing.
Like, well, it also helps to talk about them as lists. For a while, we had the everything's an app, and a document library is a lap, and a list is an app, and an app is an app. And then there's sometimes an app that's not an app, and it's kind of nice to, you know, from this side, go back and be a little more grounded and say, hey, document libraries are document libraries, and lists are lists, and we have a creation experience. It's cohesive. It brings it all together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, one of the things you guys showed that I thought was really cool that it's been in the classic was how you can create a list from an Excel spreadsheet. Because that's one of the ways I compare it a lot when I'm talking to clients. Is it's kind of like an Excel spreadsheet when you do a SharePoint list. And in classic, and I can't remember when it came out, but you could import an Excel spreadsheet and create a SharePoint list by going through that whole import process. Mm. One of the things in the keynote that was really cool was when you guys showed, hey, here's an Excel spreadsheet. Let's select the table. Copy, go into a SharePoint list, and literally paste it in, and it created the whole list just as a copy and paste from Excel.
You're right. That in addition to creating new lists, sort of getting data easily into the list is another important investment area, whether it's copy-pasting in from Excel or other data sources or more direct import or just fluid entry with a sort of modern quick edit that works across browsers. Yeah, I think it's going to go a long way. Sort of pretty... As a product designer, it doesn't take much. the designer actually has to do a ton of work. As a sort of product owner determining their relative priority, it's a pretty no-brainer to say, hey, let's make, you know, for our simple table product, let's make it easy to get data into it.
Let's make consumption a little bit easier.
Yeah. It's an area ripe for improvement, I think. So it'll be good. And that's one of the things that by investing in document libraries, you didn't really get better list data entry because you didn't have to do all that much of it in document libraries because it's more about working with files. And so this is where having an ambition level for lists in particular, I think, really helps us put the focus on what would clearly be an important problem once you look at it.
And that also brings support for things like publish templates, and I believe you demoed kind of mix and match, and let's go with this template, but maybe not have a column that comes out of that segment.
I think we're still figuring out how much it's template-based versus how much just take an existing list and make a copy of it. You know, we're working through some of those details, but yeah, definitely for that. And then you were mentioning modern to classic all up, which is definitely a big investment area to make sure that we're unblocking any reason people are having to use classic lists and library experiences. You know, we have a system, thankfully, where we have a lot of dials and controls, but the default is if something can go into modern, it's not like an upgrade or migration, right? You just get the new UX on top of your existing data. But, you know, if we detect there's a feature that's not working, we follow you back to classic. Mm-hmm. Or somebody could choose to say, hey, I'm not ready for that. So we continue to make huge investments in trying to earn the right for people to choose modern and not have it fall back. And so that's something we're going to continue to invest in.
Give them a reason to be there.
I think our usability studies show it's easier to use for sure. Our performance data shows it's faster for sure. When you're really looking to lean into one Microsoft, something like Flow and Power Apps integration, make it a no-brainer to go there. I will fully admit, like, the killer feature that says you must go to modern is still something we're looking for. We have a lot of small delighters. I secretly suspect one of the features we showed several times in the keynote, which is sort of dynamic automatic updates using Socket.io on the back end, where if somebody is working with a list or library, upload something new without having to refresh the page, it's just there. Like, I can't claim like there's when you ask a customer to put together a feature set, they put that at the top of the list. But I think I've been using that in pre-production for a while, and it just makes the list and library seem way more fluid. Yeah. I think it's going to really create some distance from classic to actually provide one of those killer reasons to get to modern. Of course, we have to earn the right. I know there's business processes and key functionality that people are expecting in modern. We have to do that too, but we're really looking for those, you know, killer reasons why people should say modern is...
I think that ecosystem starts to get kind of deeper and have some more teeth to it. And as you add automatic recognition of data types and doing those pasters, or, you know, having access to new data types like location fields natively and things like that. And to a certain degree, customers are going to have to figure out what works. You know, I can see in my head where awesome, and some of those things, as they're demoed through, they look really good, and customers are going to have to get their hands on them and try. If I'm in a high churn document library and stuff jumping all around on me as Socket.io is loading new things in the background, it might really frustrate me.
Yeah.
But in other cases, if it's depending on the business process and how we target users in, you know, that gives us as implementers and consumers of the platform some more choice and areas to pick and choose where we go.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to earn the right to be on modern. We don't plan on taking away classic anytime soon. Like, if we saw the usage numbers being virtually nil, we'd start to have some conversations. But the whole point is not, you know, you move to modern on your terms, we want to earn the right, but we're not forcing you into that at all. We're enticing you with hopefully some great value and features, but that's our strategy there.
Yeah, a lot of my clients really seem to like modern. And to your point, I haven't found a killer feature with my clients either that convinces them. It's been a combination of all of them. It's been a bit of the filters, a bit of how easy you can modify the view now by just showing, hiding, and displaying certain columns. Some of them, it's the copy and the move that you have up there. Some of it's flow. It's, by and large, to your point, I've found a lot of my clients really like modern, as long as they don't have to jump back and forth because there's a feature missing or feature doesn't work.
I totally get that.
It's been fun. I love modern. I wish I could get everybody to stay on modern because I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, it makes your life easier.
It does. It makes my life way easier.
Cool. So one of the other announcements that came out there as well on the list side was the ability to connect list items together and have kind of more fluidity of data. So if we're going from having a list item that interacts with a planner task and having the direct links back and forth, I know there were some other things that were mentioned. So that goes beyond planner, right? We have the ability to link list items into some of the other workloads as well?
Yeah, we'll figure it out as time goes by, but for sure, just like the rest of SharePoint, I mean, SharePoint works at its best when it's the glue to the rest of Office 365.
It's the fabric of our lives.
There we go. But, you know, it's something we take very seriously. And we've always had part of our culture, then since Satya has become CEO, has even sort of doubled down on it, right? And so the notion of how lists can really orchestrate and help with processes across 365, of course, using Flow and Power Apps as a true orchestration engine, just makes sense, right? Given the number of web parts we have to connect to the rest of 365 and third-party data sources. So unless, I think we're actively debating the priority of sort of planner versus calendar versus generic third-party data source and figuring it out. But in addition to making it easy to create a list and easy to get data in, making sure it can have the right connections to the when the data is not just contained within the list without being a full-on relational database, because then you're just
we're not looking to build XRM or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So finding that niche is, frankly, sometimes hard to explain at Microsoft, but customers over the years have just proven time and again there's really good product market fit to the thing that's not quite the relational database.
They're going to do it whether we tell them to or not.
More. Yeah, right? A little more than what you get with Access, for instance, and a little more shareable than that. So it's just makes my job as a product designer a little easier because I know there's great product fit. We just got to make it modern. We got to figure out the right order of investment.
Yeah, cool. And now we've got a weather web part, so that's good.
Yeah, we debated in the keynote exactly how much hay to make out of that. It's not exactly transformative, but hey, it's one of those things that was requested.
Some of us are very nostalgic. You know, we all remember going out to third-party vendors and saying, "Get us our weather web part."
Yeah, it's almost
like
the hello world.
I want a 3D weather web part only. It's like a whole 3D immersive experience. You go into it, and you can like see
you
the rain coming
down. You can build yourself
all
one
around.
Now.
Yeah,
you are enabled to go ahead and do this.
Yeah, we're unlocking the potential of the community.
Just think where we could go with this weather web part. We could take it to a whole new level.
I'm going to leave it to you. Awesome. Anything else you'd like to kind of talk about or throw out there and bring us up to speed on?
Sure. I mean, I guess I would say you were mentioning before this notion of the big ticket things and sort of the meat and potatoes. I think our investments, in AI, we really hoped came through in the keynote all up. You know, we organized by business pillar. So in other words, what end users need to get done, what businesses need to get done, like share and work together and inform and engage. And we didn't invest like by horizontal, like intelligence, but we really put special emphasis to make sure that AI and intelligence was infused throughout. And, you know, I hope it didn't get lost in the keynote because it wasn't this dedicated section, but I hope people noticed in every single major pillar there was something important about AI and intelligence. Like it is really, I think we're on the cusp of a huge transformation. We have been in the industry, and you know, enterprise collaboration is going to be one of the areas that really we can make huge strides here. So whether it's simple things like a people picker in the share and work together being really driven by intelligence and signals, or a lot of the content processing and understanding and inform and engage where you can search within a video because AI has automatically transcribed it, or in the search area for discovery, like we're We're tech transferring a bunch of consumer search tech from Bing into the Enterprise Search Index. I think it's going to be really transformative. I think the next 12 months, 24 months, we're going to see some huge moves forward there. So.
Yeah, I see a lot of that being customer-driven and them having to get their hands on it, because what's in a demo tenant and shown on stage isn't necessarily their data and the way they're going to interact with it, but certainly being able to drive users and have the platform help you drive into smarter decisions and better ways of executing your business in the context of what you do, is hugely enabling, hugely empowering, and really does bring it all together. So there's definite benefits to consolidating our identity and knowing all we can and having rich profiles. So, you know, we have these interactions in chat and we work on these documents together and, oh, we email this, and we can even then drive that through operations and understand adoption and where people are pushing workloads within the platform and help guide them into better experiences across the board.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it started a number of years ago with incubating a project like Delve, which was sort of one brand, one place mm-hmm. where we started to show intelligence. And now we learned a lot from that. And that sort of led to stage two, which was building both a platform that's massively scalable based upon that, as well as starting to embed some of these things everywhere. And now that we have the basic embedding and sort of the proof of life of the durable platform together, I think it'll be really fun to take that. And we have sort of the UX models we know we need. And now we can really sort of start rapidly iterating on it and embedding it in more places. So I think you're going to see sort of the hockey stick pretty soon of intelligence being more than just demoware. And more than just, okay, so there's the people picker everywhere now, but it's going to be really transformative.
I'm with you. I think it's hugely enabling.
Yeah, but
once it gets its hands on your data.
Right.
The same we got to prove it, too. Yeah. Right? And it's just all sort of fun and games until somebody sees it in their customer data. Yeah.
Right, and that's part of the part, like, I totally get it, and I think it's really cool, but I always struggle to explain it to customers. Like you said, it's how do you show customers the power of all the AI and the cognitive services, all of that that's underneath SharePoint, without saying just put your data out there and start using it.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes break it down into three things. This is not perfect. This is an emerging sort of framework. We're actually trying to work on it for Ignite and other conferences later this year. But the first one is content understanding. So just the notion of, especially with the rise of images and video, just the ability to use AI to extract content, extract entities, extract stuff. You know, that's pretty understandable. And most people don't realize how many images and videos they work with, because sometimes they're not in the search index and they don't realize, so they just sort of put it into the background. But especially with like ODB camera roll, OneDrive for Business being able to be backed up for your camera roll, receipts, whiteboards, and you know, just the need to have video as an emerging concept and democratizing the creation of video. So that's sort of one chunk area that if you look at it, it's just about getting insights from the content itself. And then there's all our, it's geeky, marketing needs to create a new term, there's a signal processing, right? Like there's the who's doing what, mm-hmm. and you hit the nail on the head when you said it's not just about signals in content, it's about mapping those signals with who you're emailing and who you're in time and calendar management.
Welcome back to the concept of graph databases.
exactly, but you know, and that one is a little amorphous, I get it. I think it's more about saving people time and sort of giving them a little bit of insights to the things they didn't realize were going on. It's more about what's going on, who's doing what, and like literally let's sort of have this joyous moment where we get you the thing you didn't realize you need right when you need it. And I think there'll be a whole level of personalization, recommendation, and features there. And then the third is really just search. Like search is going to, let's be honest, the search algorithms that worked on the internet created this magic moment in the early 2000s where that was magic. Look it, I can find anything in the world.
Yeah, we can move beyond the Yahoo homepage and the directory to your actual...
And you know, everybody's had some amount of success in intranet search, but it hasn't been that same magical leapfrog moment, right? And I do think with some of the deep understanding, entity extraction, some of the emerging things that are happening in our AI team, it can have that magic moment that you saw on the internet, but for the intranet. And that one is just, hey, promise. I'm making a promise, I think it's coming, as opposed to here it is. You know, we did launch a couple weeks ago the personalized results, where we're boosting results from people around your work mm-hmm. network. And that huge improvement in search success rate. We're really happy with it. But I think there's even more on the way. And so those three things, sort of the content understanding plus the signals processing and then, you know, search and discovery. That's sometimes how I try to break it down to explain it to customers.
I actually love that those discoverability mechanisms also drive into other downstream niceties like accessibility.
Yes.
And the ability to automatically do alt text on images and be able to drive experiences outside of, you know, what we might consider to be a normal day-to-day experience. And I work for a training company, and as we create these materials and we go and put our slide decks together and documents and everything else, it's top of mind for us with our customers to make that happen. So we notice a huge improvement in quality of life being, you know, working with PowerPoint and having our alt text automatically done and being able to do the same thing in Word and bring it across. And it's consistent when it identifies a picture of cats sitting in a windowsill. It's the same thing every time. It might not be right. Sometimes it was like a bird sitting there, but you can go back and change it. It's okay.
It's a starter.
But it definitely, it builds in and it kind of gives you some nice fourth pillars for free just to say, hey, we can cover that space as well.
Yeah. And this search and discovery definitely becomes more intent and entity driven. So in other words, it's not just providing a list of results, but it's actually sort of helping you get work done or actually answering the question, not just providing the content to answer. I think it'll really help with accessibility as well. I mean, even seen in the Office client, we've added search to the Office client, but we did it right where we have the sort of accessible commanding. So you're right next to search results, it's sort of like format this, take some sort of command in Word and or here's some results or people that you're interested in. And yeah, I think that sort of notion of inclusive design, so you're designing for all abilities, but not, they're not doing accessibility as an afterthought, really is baked into our search plans and it makes a huge difference. I totally agree with you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. It was great.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.